40 years after the landmark Roe versus Wade ruling, abortion is still a word that is said with outright hostility by many, despite the fact that one in three American women will have terminated at least one pregnancy by the time they reach menopause. Even those who support a woman's right to an abortion often qualify their support by saying abortion is a bad thing, an agonizing decision, making the medical procedure so remote and radioactive that it takes it out of the world of the everyday, turning an act that is normal and necessary into something shameful and secretive, according to our next guest, Katha Powett. Katha Powett, in her new book, Pro, reframes abortion as a common part of a woman's reproductive life, one that should be accepted as a moral right with positive social implications. It is a great pleasure to welcome Katha Powett to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us. When you look at that word, pro, how much of this does get into an issue of language and what we call it?
That's an interesting question. When pollsters ask people, you know, are you pro-life or are you pro-choice? It's pretty evenly divided. And one year there was a little more people saying they were pro-life, and there was a lot of propaganda made out of that. You're like, oh, all these people have changed their minds. But actually what these labels reflect is, at least what the pro-life label reflects, is people wanting to be on the side of life. Well, we're all for life. Life is a really good word, and life is a more powerful word than choice too, isn't it? It will surprise people to learn that a lot of people who tell pollsters they are pro-life also favor legal abortion. It doesn't mean what the anti-choice movement takes it to mean, which is, I want all abortion to be banned. I want abortion to be very, very, very hard to get.
How do you think we came to these labels and the way that we look at them and the way, quite frankly, that they're politicized?
Well, they go back. They go back, you know, at least to the 70s and probably before. Pro-choice, I want to say a few words, if I might, about pro-choice. Pro-choice is now falling out of favor for two different reasons. One reason is that, for example, Planned Parenthood is moving away from it because they think that it's an old-fashioned word that young people don't identify with. It sounds too consumerist. People have a lot of choices and all. It sounds like toothpaste. It sounds like, you know, what brand of mascara are you going to buy? And so they prefer to speak of walking in another woman's shoes. It's not an issue of black and white. It's more gray. I don't really go along with this. I have to say I have great admiration for Planned Parenthood. But I think when you say walk in a woman's shoes, it doesn't mean that you think that she should get to do what she thinks is best for her, right? You might say, I'm walking in her shoes, and I would have that baby. And to say it isn't black and white, it's shades of gray, really invites people, I think, to judge other women, right? To say, okay, this isn't a white, you know, quote, white abortion. It's a gray abortion. So that means you shouldn't have it, you know? The other thing about reason people don't like pro-choice anymore is because they want a wider frame, which is called reproductive justice, where it's not just about do I have a baby or don't I have a baby. It's also what do I need to be a mother to a child I want? What does it mean to be able to have all the children I want? What does it mean to be able to raise those children well? And that brings in issues of poverty, issues of race, issues, all kinds of social justice issues.
And you take exception to pro-life as well?
I do take exception to pro-life. I mean, if somebody is a total pacifist, if somebody is against capital punishment, if somebody favors a society in which every person is given what they need to flourish, like food and shelter and education and health care, that's one thing. But the pro-life movement as a whole is not on board with that. It has allied itself with the Republican Party, which is against all those things. And with the Republican Party, when in power, it's just cut, cut, cut. Everything having to do with women and children. It's not against the death penalty. It's certainly not against war. I think that it's a propaganda word. They're trying to take the very, very big word life that we all respond to and apply it to a fertilized egg, which begs the question of, well, is that a person? And I would say it's not a person.
How accurate is what we're seeing in Texas as to the problem as a whole, to the issue as a whole?
Well, I think that it's very relevant. It's very relevant. You know, the most successful way to make abortion inaccessible to women in the absence of overturning Roe v. Wade, where it could be criminalized in the states that chose to do that. The most successful tactic for the anti-abortion movement is to regulate clinics so much that they'll close, that they have to close. And then there's no clinic, right? And that's what we're seeing, not just in Texas, but that's happening. You know, there's a move to do that in Louisiana. Some clinics were forced to close in Virginia because of this, and in other states as well. So I think that what we're seeing is a tactic that we'll see more and more, unless the Supreme Court says you can't do that.
And what we've learned is that tactic works.
And what we've learned is that that tactic works. But you know what happens when a clinic closes isn't that women say, well, I guess I'll just have a baby, is that they resort to other methods. For example, the abortion pill, which you can buy on the internet, misoprostol, which is an anti-ulcer medication, which is available on the internet. You might not get that, but they tell you that's what it is. And in Mexico, over the counter. And so what you're finding is women from Texas go to Mexico and they'll bring back the pill. And the bad thing about that is that they don't have necessarily the right dosage. They don't know what to do if something goes wrong. I mean, it's a medication. You should probably not be just doing this without a lot of instruction.
You mentioned the Supreme Court a moment ago. So let's go to the latest Supreme Court decision, which was Burwell versus Hobby Lobby. The Supreme Court decision that, among other things, exempts closely held corporations from an Affordable Care Act mandate requiring the companies to provide insurance company for certain forms of contraception. How do you think that paints a picture as to what this court or how this court looks at the issue?
I think that judgment made it pretty clear that they're going to give a lot of leeway to abortion opponents. In the Hobby Lobby case, Mr. Green, the CEO of Hobby Lobby, a secular corporation that has nothing to do with religion, was allowed to refuse to offer under his healthcare plan the IUD and emergency contraception because he decided, consulting a doctor in the sky, he decided that this was abortion. Well, it isn't abortion. And yet that was, I just will never understand this. That was complete, the fact that he was wrong was completely irrelevant to this decision. So basically it's saying, you know, if you have some reason and you run a company and you're religious, you can deprive your workers of healthcare that they want and that they need. It says the CEO's right is more important than the workers' right. So there's a workers' issue and rights issue in here too. And I think they've pretty much indicated that that's where they're going.
And it's fascinating to look at the methods that Hobby Lobby will pay for.
Yeah, it's funny. Well, though they will pay for the birth control pill and a lot of other companies that are bringing forward lawsuits don't want to pay for anything. But mostly what you find like is that the methods that were common in the 1950s that didn't work very well and that people really hated, like the diaphragm, okay, that's okay. But once you get into methods that work, the pill, the IUD, then God doesn't like those. So you've got to ask yourself, what is this really all about? And what they will say is it's about abortion, that the pill causes abortion. It's baby pesticide. It's a chemical abortion. This is just ridiculous. And one thing that interests me so much is that if it isn't about controlling women, why aren't they glad that the science shows it isn't abortion? Why don't they say, hey, this is wonderful. We now have really effective methods of birth control that do not cause abortion and that protect women from unwanted pregnancy. Hooray. They don't say that. They say it's all abortion. You know, before too long, a condom will be abortion at the rate we're going.
When you talk about women speaking up, what do you make of the quality of that speech and what's being said, and is it being said loud enough and forceful enough?
Well, you know, I was very encouraged that several of the people who have reviewed the book so far have talked about their own abortions And their own abortions are just completely typical of the abortions women have in real life, which is I had children, this wasn't a good time in my life. My marriage was under stress. I wanted to go flat out at work. I didn't have a partner, all that kind of thing. And I think it's wonderful, wonderful that women are speaking up about this, because we don't want it to be that you're defending abortion rights just because you might be raped. Right? Most abortion is not about rape. Some of it is, and that's really important. And some of it is that you're in a terrible medical crisis. Some of it is that the fetus is terribly, terribly compromised. But about 90% of abortion is for everyday kinds of reasons having to do with economics, with your personal circumstances, and with what's going on in your life.
And I think that's what's so fascinating, is because that is what you so often hear. When you hear women talking about abortion, it was because it was a result of rape or illness, and it's as if, okay, that these are the acceptable reasons.
Right. There's the whole thing of the good abortion and the bad abortion, and everybody gets to decide whether some woman's abortion was a good one or a bad one. And it encourages this kind of horrible judgmentalism about women that we see so much of in American life today. You know, just think of reality TV. Just look at the tabloids where women's weight is being monitored. You know, every 5 pounds is subject to, you know, fantastic, obsessive interest and critique. I think we need to get away from this. I think we need to say, probably this woman knows what she's doing. She is planning her family, and she is trying to make a rational life for herself in a society that does not support motherhood, which is another piece of this. You know, it's very important to plan your family, because you're not going to get paid maternity leave. You're not going to get, you know, in many states, you're not going to get Medicaid expansion if you're poor. So you won't be covered. You're not going to get, certainly not going to get a raise at work, and you may find yourself marginalized at work or even, you know, pushed out. So the idea that having a baby is just some kind of uncomplicated decision, and that to have an abortion is a matter of, quote, convenience, unquote, really demeans both women and also motherhood. You know, it says being a mother is kind of nothing. Anybody can do it.
And you want us as a culture, as a society, to talk about why we have so many pregnancies that are unplanned. And why it's such a big deal to ask a guy to put on a condom.
Yeah, I was just talking about this with someone the other day, that a man is much more willing to wear a condom. And I'm speaking very, very generally here. So, you know, all you men out there who are fans of the condom, please forgive me. But, you know, typically a man is willing to wear a condom with a new partner in a new relationship. But once there's some stability and trust, they don't want to do it. And there's a very funny thing on the web called "If Buying Condoms was like Buying Birth Control." And it has a male character has to go through everything a woman goes through to get the pill. You know, embarrassing conversations with parents and, you know, a doctor, and embarrassing questions are asked. And then you have to stand online. And then, you know, you might run out of pills before you can get the next round, because you might lose some or whatever. It's very complicated. I think, you know, it would be really great if men took more responsibility for birth control, and also if they, you know, really agitated the way women agitated for the birth control pill, if men agitated for a method that was male controlled, a hormonal method or other methods, so that, you know, that they could really be equal partners in birth control.
You state in the book, we need to talk about the extraordinary contradictory demands we make upon young girls to be simultaneously sexually alluring and withholding.
It's true. Hot virgins. That's what it is. I mean, it's you know, the cult of virginity connected with abstinence-only education is really weird. You know, a girl is supposed to be demure, nice, pleasant, pretty, stylish, up to date, go just so far and no farther. And then somehow she's supposed to get married, and everything reverses, right? Now sex is wonderful. Before that, it was disgusting. Abstinence-only classes, they'll pass around, you know, a peppermint patty, that chocolate candy, and after it's been handled by everyone in class, like, this is what a girl looks like, you know, if she's not a virgin. A girl is like a wad of used chewing gum. They'll have people spit into a cup, and this is what sex is like. So, you know, ew, how disgusting. And it's all about the girl. It's not about the boy. The boy is not a peppermint patty if he has sex.
And wrapping up, I mean, you end with the point that there is no perfect contraception and there are no perfect people.
Well, that's it. The idea that all women could exercise perfect control over their fertility, which means exercising control over your fertility for about 30 years perfectly, right? This is hard to do. This is very hard to do. And so our picture that the woman who gets pregnant unintentionally is lazy, is overly sexual, is stupid. This is the wrong picture. These are women who have to do this in a very perfect way for a very long period of time in very complicated situations that arise in life, and it's not always possible to do.
The name of the book is Pro Reclaiming Abortion Rights. It is published by Picador Hardcover. Katha Pollitt, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book is Pro Reclaiming Abortion Rights. The book is published by Picador. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.